song. Is it?
Hello, and welcome to Whose Song Is It Anyway? I'm Dr. Hayley Bosher, and for this special season of the podcast, focusing on women in the music industry, I'll be your host.
So, hi, I'm Dr. Hayley Bosher. I'm a senior lecturer in intellectual property law. Actually, I just got promoted, and I'm now a reader, so I don't know what I'm doing, giving my old title. Crowd goes wild. Also, I love being called reader because, like, what a hilarious title.
I'm a reader.
It's like, yeah, she reads. What do you do for a living? Because I read. Do you read? anyway,
brilliant.
Sorry. Host of this season's podcast, focusing on women in the music industry. And today we have the incredible Eve Horn. So over to you, Eve, if you could please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hi, I'm Eve Horn, singer-songwriter producer, executive director of the Music Producers Guild and the first person of colour ever. I'm also a board and senate of the IVAs through the Advocacy Accelerator programme and founder of Peak Music UK, now a CIC as of last week, and the Unheard Academy, where I teach female non-binary and trans women music production, and that's supported by Ableton. I also have my own podcast called We Are the Unheard, where we discuss everything to do with anyone who's ever felt unheard in their life, and it covers things from depression, racism, religion, menopause, depression, neurodiversity. It literally covers everything, and it was based on my own experiences, and I was like, if I feel like this, I know that there's millions of other people that do, and we need to hear their stories. I do loads of other things that I'm sure we'll discuss throughout this podcast, but I'll leave it there.
Great, thank you so much. We really appreciate you being on the podcast today, and I'm sure the listeners who, if you're listening to this, then they will obviously love your podcast too, so I'll put the link to that in the bio for anybody who's interested. Okay, so you do so many things, and I just don't even know where to begin. So let's begin at the beginning. Tell us a bit about your story. Like, how did you get into the music industry and everything? Kind of, one, I'm interested to know, like, your journey, and also what motivated you to then sort of branch out and start doing these additional kind of campaigning, like, activism level kind of activity.
Okay. So, I started, I always wanted to be a singer since I was about six, as far back as I can remember. Sitting in front of, now I know why, obviously because of my diagnosis, but I would literally sit cross-legged in front of the telly all day recording music and listening over and over and over and over and over and over and over again to the same things and getting butterflies in my stomach and being like, I'm going to be a singer, I'm going to be a singer, I'm going to be a singer, and imagining myself on stage, and this feeling that would run through me was just, oh, you know. And then I used to go to a Catholic school, and they gave this leaflet to the schools one day, and it was about this new school, this performing arts school that they were opening in Croydon called The Brits. So I was like, I want to go, because I was bored out of my head in you know, my normal primary school. So, I just got into secondary school, actually. I think I was about 13. And so I went to The Brits school when it first opened, and from there I got signed to my first record label. At 18, so I got signed to Polydor, and I had to leave the Brits a year early. And then I was in a girl group in the 90s, and we toured with people like Backstreet Boys and Boyzone, Peter Andre, you know, did the whole Wembley Arena thing, smash hits, Just 17 magazine, Radio 1 Roadshow, the whole thing. It was brilliant. It was my first time I ever got to fly on a plane as well, because I was 18 at the time. And we worked with Jermaine Dupri in Atlanta. It was a magical experience for an 18-year-old, and it was crazy. It had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of bullying. I was massively bullied. But even then, I knew, I was really upset towards the end, and my mum was like, just leave. And I was like, I can't, because I knew then, even at that young age, that if I left, I wouldn't be able to get back into the industry. I was like, I've got one foot in, I need to stay until something else comes up. And then I went on tour with a friend who was also signed to, she was signed to Island, and we were under the same management. And we had just done a big arena tours, and she hadn't. So I went to kind of help her kind of do her stage presence stuff and how to work big stages. And on that tour, there was other artists. And this is so weird because I'd stood in my mum's front room and seen this girl group on television. And back in the 90s, when you was in a girl group, the rule was you hated every other girl group. It was just a rule. You didn't even know why. And I saw this girl group on TV and I didn't know who they were. I just saw their video on the box. And I was like, I got the butterflies again. And I was like, I love them. They're amazing. I had no clue who they were. Anyway, go on this tour. I'm watching this artist. I won't say who she was. It doesn't matter, actually. Her name's Hinda. She was a good friend of mine. And so she's doing her performance. And then this girl group come on. And I was like, oh, that's them. That's them from the telly. And so I go backstage and, you know, we meet them. And we become great friends throughout this whole tour. And they had thought I was her manager because they'd come out and seen us in the sound check doing her like stage stuff. And I was like, no, I'm just a friend. So we became really good friends on the tour, bigging each other up in interviews, blah, 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 blah. I signed up to their fan club. Oh, I'm such a joker. Signed up to their fan club. And anyway, during that tour, they found out one of the people in their group didn't want to be in it anymore. And they asked me to join. And I was like, and so, yeah, I won't go into the story that surrounded the whole of that, but I ended up joining this group. I went through massive turmoil because I'm a really loyal person. So I was stuck in this place of, I didn't want to go because I wanted to be loyal to my old group, but my old group were bullying me and treating me like crap. And this was a new opportunity I'd been waiting for, but I wanted to stay loyal. So I said to my managers, I was like, don't tell the girls, I haven't made my mind up, but they want me. And in the meantime, we'd gone to the Netherlands to do a performance and they were really nice, my old girl group, really like strangely, strangely nice to me. And I was like, I could not figure it out. I was like, why are they being so nice? Anyway, I got back and I was ushered into the meeting with the mums and everything. And they were basically telling me, having a go at me and telling me that I can't leave. And this, and I was like, wow. And then it all clicked. I was like, if you need to be nice to me because you realise that I might be leaving. And I'd called my lawyer, I'd set everything up. I could leave because there were other things that were going on that shouldn't have, so I could have just left. And I ended up saying yes to the new girl group, and it was the scariest thing I ever did. And I said yes on the Monday, and on the Saturday I was flying to Denmark, having a champagne breakfast, going to the head of EMI Europe's house, not having a clue what I was doing at the age of 21 in a country I had no idea about, and I didn't speak the language. It was just, yeah, very crazy. And I lived there for 3 years and joined that group. And again, amazing. Yeah, we toured all over Europe, Asia, Philippines, Singapore. We still have one of the most played Christmas songs 20 years later. So that was me as a singer. And then that ended, and I knew it always would, but I wasn't ready for what happened after, because I couldn't stay living over there because I had family and everything here, and I had to make a decision to come back to the UK, and I crashed, the biggest crash ever. I was not prepared. I'd gone from limos, private jets, you know, being on TV constantly to paying to get on a bus. And I just felt like a massive failure. You know, in between, I went straight from school to this world. And then I had to learn how to be normal. And I lived on a council estate, I still do. And I came back to a world where everyone was, you know, depressed. My cousin had just been put in prison for murder. I'm okay to say all of this stuff, you know, it's my life. There were people, yeah, a family down the road had been murdered in their this is like the situation I came back to. And I was like, wow, no one knew what I'd been through. I had no friends here. Everyone was just, yeah, in my family, they're amazing. I love my family to bits, but I'm very different to them. I am the only one who has got this drive and ambition. And so I've always felt misunderstood. But now I know why, because of my diagnosis. You know what I mean? All of this, as I'm going on this journey, I didn't even realise any of this. I'm like, just, I felt misunderstood my whole life. I couldn't ever figure it out. And that now I know why I'm very different from everyone. But yeah, then, you know, I got massive depression.
Sorry to interrupt. I just feel like for the purpose of the listeners, do you want to just say a bit about the diagnosis so that they know what you're talking about?
Yeah, sorry. So recent this year, I got diagnosed in February with ADHD and autism. So I got my autism diagnosis first and then my ADHD diagnosis. And I'm 46 and it wasn't a shock because I just think differently to others. I don't fit in anywhere. I can't, my whole life I've never understood why people are cruel, why they're not kind, why people lie, why things aren't fair. I've got this massive thing with fairness, and in normal jobs, nothing is fair. You know, there's hierarchy, there's all of this stuff. And, you know, when I worked in a job where people are very much out for themselves and you know, they just did not have the empathy or care about other people. It was all about like, get as much money as you can, do what you can, trample on who you can to get what you need to get. And it's the opposite of who I am. And when you have autism, you can't even put yourself in someone else's shoes to try to see how they see things. You can only see what you see, and you just know that it's wrong. And that then has an effect on you, and it causes anxiety. It does so many other things that you don't realise are happening, but you're like, why? You know, the only thing to do is to leave, because I can't continue being in this presence. I can't continue being in this place. And I worked, you know, as much as I could to make it the job meaningful for me at the time. But yeah, I'm jumping as well. ADHD. Jumping all over the place, so my timeline's going to be it's going to be everywhere.
It's all good. We're following you, and we'll go back to continue the story. But I just wanted to, you've said something so important, which is so meaningful for me anyway, because I think there's a real misconception that people with autism lack empathy, and actually what you're saying is that you're almost more empathetic. And I also have this like sense of justice that drives me absolutely insane, but also drives what I do. And I think it's been a really similar journey. Same the thing with the lying and like the weird, I don't get it. No. I don't understand why people aren't just upfront. And so people, I think there's a misconception about.
Yeah, totally. And so since I've been a child, my mum, I say this on my own podcast, my mum has said, Eve, not everyone's like you. Today, she still says the same thing. And that's how I know, like, I've been crying, not being able to understand why people are cruel. Like, you know, friends would not just tell me they don't want to hang out with me. Just tell me, I can take the truth. But what I can't take is you lying to me and going and meeting someone else and pretending that it didn't happen, because I can see exactly what's going on. I'm so empathetic. Like one of the things that I regularly have said throughout my whole life is life physically hurts, because I'm sensitive to so much that I get a physical reaction in my body. And trying to say this to anyone makes me sound insane, but that's literally what happens. It's so painful sometimes that you want to just, you know, it's easier to just think, I might as well just end it, you know? Ooh.
Yeah. I don't think it's not insane. It's only, it's difficult to explain it to people who haven't had that experience. Oh, Eve. Bless you. Honestly, it's not insane. I completely understand what you mean. I mean, I have different, for people listening, autism's a, people describe it as a spectrum, and we all have different kind of sensory issues. But that's how I sometimes explain how I feel when I get sensory overload. It's like pain. Yeah. So I know exactly what you mean. It's different, as in, you know, you will have different triggers and different things that overwhelm you. Yeah. But honestly, people will be listening to this and they will understand you, because there are, you know, like we said, we were joking before we started recording that we don't know that many neurotypical people because we sort of collect the like-minded ones, don't we? And so the ones listening to this who aren't neurotypical, they will know what you mean. And it is so hard and it's so exhausting.
Yeah, exactly. It's the emotional and it's affected everything. It's affected all my relationships. Everyone who knows me will know because I'm very vocal as well. I don't hide. That's the other thing about being autistic. I have no filter, and that's got me in trouble my whole life.
Same, yeah. Open book.
I'm literally an open book, and I give way too much information all the time to the point where I have to apologize. But, you know, I talk, I don't have a cue. Like, I'll go up to someone in the completely wrong time and say the wrong thing. And it's just how I've been my whole life. And partners I've been with can't handle it. I've been told I'm too loud, I'm too embarrassing, I'm too opinionated, I'm too emotional, I'm too everything. And, you know, it's affected education. It's affected, I mean, not that I haven't succeeded, but, you know, the road could have been so much easier. And then being mixed race as well, I've always been told I've got attitude because I won't allow someone to talk to me in a certain way. I'm like, generally, I am the most loving, caring person, and I'm always polite. I've been brought up to say my pleases and thank yous. I respect my elders. I hold doors open. I carry shopping if I see another. It's just who I am because it makes me so happy. But I can also switch because I've grown up where I've grown up and I've had to have that. That's had to be a part of who I am. So if someone does me wrong or and I don't feel I've deserved it, I will have that, you know, I'll be like, you know, don't. And I will switch. And then I get told I've got attitude. And I'm like, I can't win. I just can't win. Like, nothing I do is good enough. I don't know. I can't say the right things. I can't be myself. I can't, you know, it's just crazy. And you know, I've just come out of a long relationship with my daughter's mum, and that is one of the reasons why I went for the diagnosis, because of the struggles I had in that and the constant, what I now know is stimming, you know, just being told I was controlling when I was like, please can you just turn the tap off, or that needs to just go there because I'm having my body's reacting to the fact that it isn't where it needs to be. And I'm like, I promise I'm not trying to control. I just, you know, and I was just constantly trying to explain myself all the time and being taken the wrong way, you know. And it wasn't just exclusive to that. It's in everything. Yeah. It's not just, it's in everything. And so I am always like, is that right? Is that the right thing to say? Is this, you know, and then with that comes with, it's not a paranoia. It's like because I sense energy as well, I can tell, like, because I'm someone who is kind and I'll just be that way I'm the same all the time, you know, there's no different me. I mean, I'm like this, or I'm just quiet, or I'm just like this. And I'm a big kid, and so when people's energy changes to me, that I think, you know, I've known you for ages, like, but then they at an event or something choose to not talk to me because they just, and I'm like, I take it personally. I'm like, what have I done? They don't like me. Why are they doing this? What? And then my head just starts going and I'm like, I'm just gonna go and build pallet furniture instead in my garage and you know, listen to it's just easier to just listen to my music, build my furniture and sell it online, because I don't have to interact with humans. And I can just, and then, you know, I love animals, and, you know, I'd much rather be around animals than human beings, unfortunately. But I love humans too, the nice ones.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I know. And do you know what's, honestly, lots of things that you're saying, I'm finding it's so relatable. And I'm the same, but I'm quite an extreme person. So I'll be like, super social, do all the things, high energy. Hi, I'm Hayley, I'm life and soul of the party. And then I have to go away for 3 weeks and not talk to one person.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it's too much, I can't cope.
Yeah, I'm very much the same.
Yeah, I think, and there's lots of things where for you, I feel like when I was going through the same journey with the diagnosis of like figuring out that, oh, okay, this is a me thing, but it's also not my fault. It's just the way my brain works. And
yes,
you're using a lot of words of like wrong, like the wrong thing to say. But sometimes I feel like, is it wrong or it's just different? And if you're with your people who understand you, yeah, and you understand yourself and can articulate yourself in a way that you can communicate with people what your needs are, like you said, sometimes it's difficult because you're over-explaining. But at the same time, that you get to a point where you can explain, like, these are my needs and I get that this is a me thing and these are my coping mechanisms. But seriously, if you don't turn the fucking tap off, I'm going to go nuts.
Yeah, literally. You know, and it's like, as we explained, like, before we hit record, like, I'm just now learning to understand that, yes, this is me, but it's okay. Like, I've been, the narrative that's been told to me my whole life is, it's my problem and I'm wrong and I'm weird and I should be less, or and I should be quieter and I shouldn't expect too much. It's always like, you expect so much of others. You expect so much. I'm like, because I expect it of myself and I see amazingness in people and I want them to live that from themselves. And when I see people that I love and care about not doing that, it affects me. And that's when I come over controlling and you should do this, maybe you should do that. And it's too much for normal people. So it makes you kind of like just stop being around people. And it's like, now I, you know, the last few years since my breakup, I've got rid of friends, so-called friends that didn't even come and see me. That was one of the hardest parts of my life, dealing with a baby that wasn't even three and her, all of the emotions that go with that. And I'm like, I deserve better than this. I just got rid of people and I've, you know, dealt with it and gone through it. And yes, I've been smiling in, you know, at the events and stuff, but there are people that in the industry that I have spoken to and they do know what I've been going through and they've been so supportive. And that was the other thing. I was like, wow, if people that I hardly see all the time and I've only met online are actually asking how I am, but my friends of 20 years can't even come and see me, something's not right. So I've realised as well with this diagnosis that what I will put up with now and what I won't. And I guess I'm realising my worth finally at 46. I'm not thinking that it's I'm the problem, you know? So, yeah, I think people are going to be really bored of me talking about autism and ADHD and, you know, all the other things that I encompass and who I am. So
not at all. We are so here for it. And I think there are so many people going through the same journey and it's really refreshing. Honestly, I love talking about it because I was diagnosed about 10 years ago, but the conversations around what it really means, I didn't tell anyone, nobody knew, but now I talk about it because other people are talking about it. And when you say I have this experience, I'm like, oh yeah, me too. Like, I feel so warm inside because I'm like, oh, thank God it's not just me, I'm not the only weird one.
Yeah.
And also then you can move the conversation forward and be like, what are your coping mechanisms? How do you do with this? And I think what you've said about losing friends, I had similar experience. It was things like putting boundaries in that should have been there for 20 years, people I've known for such a long time. And then I say, actually, I can't manage that. I can't cope with that right now. Like, my physiological body reaction is telling me I can't deal with that right now. And they're like, yeah, but you've always done that. So like, why would you not do that now? And I'm like, because I'm trying to actually listen to my body for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah.
And then they don't respond. And then it's like, okay, well, I don't think you're really actually my friend if you don't care about what I'm going through right now. And in the end, I felt like, you know, the people who are still in my life, it's maybe there's been a learning curve in terms of the communication, like you said, about your needs and your worth and your boundaries and your journey. But that if someone cares about you, then they're here for that and they're listening and it's a growth together. And then, but for other people, I think I look back on those people and I don't regret being friends with them, but I do think that I'm fine not being friends with someone who doesn't respect my boundaries and care about what's going on with me, just because it's always been like I've cared a lot about you. That was the dynamic of the relationship.
Yeah.
And I think you go on this journey. It's a journey of, like you said, of your self-discovery, self-worth, and then it does end up reflecting on the work that you do, the people you hang around with, because you start to wake up a little bit and be like, oh, maybe I'm not that unreasonable for just asking for this like really small respect.
That is exactly it. That is where I'm at now. So I've looked back on my life and realised it's me that drove everything. So when I graduated from uni, I set up a recording studio with the Prince's Trust in 2002 to promote female producers and help disadvantaged kids. And it was my idea, like it was in my area because I used to have to travel 2 hours to get to the Brit School and there was nothing here creatively for young people, or there was no women doing anything. So we built a recording studio and set that up. And again, it was like, it was all me. I drive a lot of things. And I'm not saying that because I want to take credit, but what I'm saying is after it ended and my business partner, she didn't want to do it anymore. Her mum had unfortunately just passed away. And so I got that and it was just a really difficult time. But the point of this story is I didn't feel I was good enough to do it on my own. And I've never, and that's one of my problems that I've had. I will have all the ideas and drive something and have someone do it with me because I love collaborating. But then I give to everyone else that I lose myself. And that's happened in friendships. It's happened in relationships. And I'm such a giver, and I'm such like, I can make you amazing. I can make you the best that you can be. And I love watching other people flourish. And it doesn't work in friendships and it doesn't work in relationships. And the common theme throughout all of this is I lose myself in that process. And this last relationship was one of those things where I was like, I'm not doing that anymore, because I look back and I was like, I was always good enough. And I've wasted so much time doubting myself, going through depression, second guessing everything when it was always within me. And I guess that's why I've kind of come full circle now, why I do coaching, why I do a lot of teaching, why I do mentoring, why I have my academy, why I do my podcast, because I love helping people and I love giving, and the feeling that gives me is what makes me know that that's kind of like my purpose. And what that's helped me to realise as well is that moving forward, anyone who comes into my life has to accept that.
I love it. And obviously I'm going to ask you, talk to us about the turning point. What can we learn from you and that journey? Because I think, we all have that journey to go on with this. I'm still working on the self-worth thing. Like, it's not something you just wake up one day and you're like, actually, I'm excellent. Tell us about what...
I'm phenomenal, darling.
How could I not have seen it? For the purpose of the listeners, we're doing like a lot of hair flicking right now to get into character.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Anyway, yeah, tell us about that, because I feel like we can all learn from each other on that one.
So my turning point, I think it was all of it. It was my ex leaving me. And I remember something coming out of my mouth and saying, is it because I'm not good enough? And then I actually retracted it straight away. Before she could even say no, I was like, actually, that's rubbish. No, because that was something it was always a subconscious thing that would come out. I'd always feel not good enough when something happened, when, a friend didn't want to be, it was always aimed at myself. It's me, it's me, it's me, it's me. So that was one thing that I realised very quickly. I was like, oh, I'll turn that around quick. And then from there, I was like, do you know what? I know I gave everything. I know I'm not perfect. No one is. But I know where my heart is at, and I know who I am as a person, and I know the reasons that caused the issues I feel in the relationship were due to, one, I started going through my menopause early in the relationship and didn't realise caused big issues. And then obviously I'm autistic and I have ADHD. So I'm constantly on the go. I'm driving, I'm high energy, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. You know, we're in Thailand and I'm on the beach looking for baby shells for like 3 hours going, oh my God, this is amazing. Oh my God, this is amazing. Oh my God, this is amazing. Feeling like phenomenal. And, you know, every time I see a dog, I'm like, oh, dog, oh, dog, oh, dog, you know, and some people can't take that. And I just repeat loads of things. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I'm literally a child and I get excited so much about everything and I'm a lot. And if someone affects me, I react to it and it's who I am. And not everyone can handle that. And, you know, there was another time where I was sat here and she said to me, oh, you're never going to stop, are you? And I was like, why would you say that to me? Do you know who I, like, of course I'm not. So I can't stop. It's who I am. It's what I do. Like,
and what is stopping?
Yeah, right. So all of these things just was like, there's something wrong. Our communication just wasn't right. And I was like, felt like I was being attacked for things that, and blamed for things that weren't me. And now I know it. A lot of the things were because of my actions due to my autism and ADHD, and our communication just wasn't, because I can't get things. So I was like, what do you know? And it was, I can see it clearly now, but when you're in it, you can imagine, like, there would, it'd be so much like frustration. And then you put a baby in the mix, and you know, we were in lockdown. It was a lot. There was losses from families, and you know, for me, I could see what the issues were. I just felt like they were, you know, 8-year long-term issues in a relationship and you need to work through it. But some people can't handle it. I am a lot, and I'm okay with that now. I can say that I'm okay with that. And like I said, you know, that was kind of like the turning point was the relationship ending and me realizing something's wrong, something's not right. And I went for the diagnosis. I was like, this can't just be me. I just knew it wasn't just that. I knew there was something else that had contributed to it. And I was right. And when I got it, I was like so happy and relieved that I've been right all along about who I am. But at the same time, it brought up so much emotion. And then I was like, right, I believe in myself because I know I'm a good person. I did Tony Robbins UPW. I've done it twice. Did it twice in 1 year. And I went from... I came off my medication as well because I was on antidepressants from when they... when I was going from my menopause, they put me on sertraline, which is like... it helps your serotonin levels in your brain. But what they don't tell you is when you're on that stuff that it actually replaces your serotonin. So when you forget to take it, so the few times I'd forgotten to take it, you end up going insane because you are completely depleted of serotonin. So you'd have these episodes and I wouldn't know what was going on. And I'd be like, why am I so angry? And that's why. So I came off them when the relationship ended. I stopped having a glass of wine a night and I was just like, nah, I need to be clear-headed. And I focused on me and telling myself every single day. If you look on my bathroom mirror, there's just like everything, you know. I was staring in the mirror saying how phenomenal I was through tears, snot and tears. I'm like, you're amazing. You can do this. Ah, you know.
I'm laughing, but I'm also like,
true.
I have been there.
It is true.
I'm there with you.
Yeah. It's true. And, you know, you push through and you choose. It all comes down to making a conscious choice. And it's as simple as that. When I'm feeling low, sometimes, yes, it's so much harder. And it takes you a while to get out of it. But you say, in this moment, am I happy? And you look at everything you've got. I've got a phenomenal, beautiful daughter. I have a beautiful home. I have my health. I have food on the table, I have clothes, I have a job, I have a family, I have a car, you know, I have everything that I could wish for. What am I sad about? When you flip it like that, you can instantly get out of anything that you're feeling. Because depression is the most selfish disease ever, because it's all about you. It literally, you can't see past you. You can't see past yourself. You can't see past what you're feeling. No one can help you. You know, it's horrid, and I've been there, and you get trapped in this space. And words don't help. Someone saying, how are you doing? You know, none of that stuff helps. I always say, if someone's depressed, hug them and hold them. Even if they're wriggling, just hold them until. That's one of the things I say. The other thing is learning, if you're feeling down, help someone else straight away. Message someone, ask how they're doing. And it's about giving back. So gratitude and giving are the two things that I would say are what turned it around. I started becoming more grateful. I'm really grateful, not just saying it, like really being grateful for what I had, and realizing that nothing is ours to keep, and we just have to. And forgiveness. I learned how to forgive, which has been amazing. It's really important. Even now, when things happen and I see people that aren't being nice to me, I'm like, it's not your fault, it's theirs. And that was a big thing as well, realizing when people aren't kind, it's not my fault. And that was huge, because my whole life I've always thought it's me. Yeah, it's them. And it's, you know.
I love it. I feel like this is a beautiful journey that you've been on. And I'm hearing, like, as I said, lots, it's very relatable things that you're saying. And I feel like we've read some of the same books, to be honest. All those self-help books and all those, you know, resources that can help you, because I'm the same as you. I'm proactive. So when I had a bad depression, I was like, I can't stay here. To the point, I made a behavior chart. I made myself a behavior chart, and I would give myself, because I was trying to track it, and I was just trying to make myself just 1% better, just 2% better, get there. But I was never going to give up. And I would agree. I think gratitude sounds cheesy, but it works. You just can't knock it. Nope. Changing that kind of frame of mind of like, what can I be grateful for? Even if it's the simplest thing, like a little cup of tea in that moment, it's not about, you know, how shit you're feeling. And same with, as you said, like caring for someone else, giving for someone else, taking the focus off how shit you're feeling and putting that energy onto other people is so effective. Yeah. And then makes you feel good. Makes you feel good about yourself, because you're like, oh, okay, there's a point to me being on this planet, because I can be useful and helpful to people and, you know, lift them up. And then actually what you get as a knock-on effect is that you feel better too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's...
So I love that. And thank you so much for sharing.
No, pleasure. You know, I mean, sometimes I'm like, God, if people hear this, they're going to be like, again, you're like, I'm going to be judged, I'm going to be this. And then I'm like, I don't care, because it's who I am. Like, I have to override it. And, you know, I'm not hurting anyone. I'm just telling my story. And this is it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like, for me anyway, when I started kind of being more open about this sort of stuff, at first I was just, yeah, I thought people would judge me, and I was terrified. And also, I just felt like a bit, I don't know, weird, like humiliated, like a bit of an idiot. Like, why am I struggling with this? Like it was weak or something. But now I'm just like, that's not it at all. And the fact that like I'm still able to operate in the world as a human despite all of these challenges and people don't even know about it actually is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And maybe if I talk about it and I share it, will make life easier for other people who are struggling with the same thing, thinking that everything's hunky-dory and actually I find life really easy when actually I don't.
No, it's tough. You know, it's hard to stop the thoughts in your head and to override it. And you know, when you have autism and ADHD, it's constant. Like your mind does not stop. My brain does not stop ever. And it just, oh, I can't, if someone could sit in my head for a day, they'd be exhausted. you know, but I love, it's just, I love it at the same time, because I realized that my whole life, when I was an expert at Apple, I was a trainer, I was a mentor, you know, everything I've done, I've been an assessor, a trainer, a mentor, like my whole life I've done this. And so the feeling I get from helping people and the feeling I get from watching someone go from unsure and nervous to knowing and confident is worth more than anything for me. And so I get to live that and I get to do it. And maybe it's selfish, but I feel fantastic when I'm doing this stuff. And it's amazing. Yeah, I just want to live life doing this.
It's definitely not selfish.
It is, because you're kind of doing it to feel good.
It's a win-win, Eve. Yeah, winning here.
Yeah, win-win. Yeah, I like that. I'll take that one.
Okay, we're going to have to go back to the cliffhanger we left earlier because everyone's going to be like, tell us the rest of the story that we got sidetracked from. Do you remember? About 45 minutes ago.
I can't remember.
So... You were saying you came back from Denmark and you were like, what is this weird normal world that everyone's living that's different? And you sort of had a downer. We kind of led into the kind of how did you turn it around story. But I was interested to know about, what happened next in the story and then how you got from that to, you know, doing all of the things you're doing now. And also just tell us a bit more about those things, like your lovely branded sweatshirt that you're wearing.
Yes, I'm shaking my boobs. basically, I came back and I lived back in the UK and I got depression, basically, and I did everything I could. I was on every pill and none of them were working and I was going to the gym. I decorated my flat the same as my room in Denmark. I went to the gym and I was falling asleep because they gave me the wrong pills and I was like, I've got to change these. But I was on the treadmill, even then, repeating the name of the company that I wanted to create and imagining receptionists answering the telephone with the name. And I did it, and then I was like, right, I didn't like the little bit of fame that I had. I didn't like walking down the street being recognised. And I was like, right, I want to do the back end stuff. So I went to university and studied to be a sound engineer. It was called Gateway School of Recording and it was a private university. Kian Dahoji, my main man, he was one of my teachers who taught me copyright. And he was someone who really helped me through that time because he was just great. He was so much fun. And teaching copyright is hard. And he made it fun. And I actually enjoyed going to his lessons, you know. And then the rest was, you know, just mixing desks and post-production and things like that. And then I graduated I can't remember when I graduated. I think 2002. And then set up the studio with Prince's Trust. And we won National Business Award, that one there, and Enterprise in London Award for the work that we did for young people and trying to promote female producers 20 years ago, way ahead of our time. Then, you know, that didn't work out and both myself and my business partner at the time ended up working in Apple and I became an expert. She became what they call now genius. And again, like I said, I became a personal shopper. So I'd sit with customers for hours, loved it. And it was still working with Logic and things like that. So I was like, it's not really fully out of music. And, you know, I became a mentor and a trainer. So I, trained all the team. And after that, I got ill. So I had to have a hysterectomy and I had bowel surgery as well. So I had a bag. And in that time, again, I was thrust back into like, who am I? I was ill. I couldn't do anything. And then I was like, do you know what? If I can't do music, and I was still going through my depression. It was like a 10-year period, all of this. I was like, my identity was just all over the place. And a friend of mine who worked in an airline sent me this job thing about being a train driver. I'd already applied to be a firefighter because my ex was a firefighter. And I was like, I've always wanted to be a policewoman or helping. But then I realised firefighters don't really do a lot if you're not in a place that has a lot of, you know, things. So... And I'm like, I can't, I'd be bored. Even though I got in, I passed the physical and everything. But then by the time it came round and I got in again, I'd had the operation with my bag. So I applied for that and to become a train driver, and I got both of them and I became a train driver for 6 years. And
I was not expecting this part of the story. Talk about curveball. So I was a pop star and then I was a train driver and now I'm here.
Yes, I can drive trains.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I make pallet furniture as well. So yeah, I've got
You are literally a walking textbook ADHD.
That's what I'm saying. People are like, why can't you do anything? Like, why do you do so? And I'm like, I can't. The thought of not doing different things every day. Like if I had to sit in a studio and engineer every day of my life, I would stab myself in the eyes with forks. If I had to do the same thing every day, it's like prison for me. And again, trying to explain that to people is really, really, really hard. So I can't do it. I have to do different things all the time, every single day. That's what makes me alive. Like if I have a day off.
And on the flip side, the positive is that you can have so many skills and do so many different things and like your life is so exciting and fun and there's loads of different projects. And I think you're such a good person to have around because it will be like, oh, my washing machine's broken. And I bet you'd be like, oh, I could fix that. And then you'd be like, oh, I need to mix this song. And it'd be like, I could definitely do that for you.
The thing is as well, like my mum brought us up on our own. So from young, I was changing plug sockets, changing light switches, painting and decorating. I was going to start a paint and decorating company as well because I lay floors, I do tiling, I'm a paint and decorator. Like I love it. I just love doing stuff. Like I just enjoy doing so many different things.
I love it. So anyway, you're a train driver. Go back to the
story. Sorry, yes, I was a train driver. And ADHD. I became a train driver. So then I was like, oh, really bored because it was just like going up and down, up and down. And I was like, oh, I'm going to circle trying to fit into a square. And again, the environment was not for me. It's a very harsh environment. Everyone's out for themselves, really. You know, it's an environment where everyone knows everyone, everyone's family, everyone's associated, you know, and you have to work really hard to get anywhere. And I ended up becoming a shunter, which is called in the depots, coupling and uncoupling trains, doing safety checks and stuff like that. And then I became a trainer, so I trained my whole team, safety operating procedures and track walking and all of that stuff, and an assessor as well. So I became an assessor so that I could assess, you know, people. And then I couldn't take it anymore because it just wasn't, everything was going against who I was, everything. And I was really not happy. I got anxiety every single day. It was night work. I was going through a menopause and I was just, we were planning on having our daughter and I was like, I just can't. I ended up getting counselling. I've had CBT. I swear by it. Everyone should have some. I got some light bulb moments from that. And I was just like, I've got to jump back into music. I have to go back into music. My soul is dying. And I didn't know, I was like, where do I start? I don't know anyone, I don't know how to do it, I don't know what I'm doing. I saw this thing for Native Instruments, decided to sign up on a Sunday, got in my car and just drove there. I promised myself from now on, I'm going to be open to everything. Because I left, I was on a lot of money and I was like, I'm never going to earn this much money. It's like, don't care, my happiness is more important. And I was like, I'm going to be open and I'm going to have fun. No, the two things I promised myself, and I just said yes to everything. And I went along to a Native Instrument meetup, loved it. By the time the next meetup came around, I was part of the team. Then I became a Native Certified Specialist. And then I started doing things on my YouTube channel. Then I started my company, Peak Music, which was to teach songwriters, music production, because I do both and they both speak different languages. So I was like, I want to give them more confidence in the studio, even if they don't want to be producers, but so they understand the process, the language, and they can easily portray artistically to a producer what they want, rather than, you know, being frustrated at this relationship. I started doing songwriting camps. A friend of mine's got a beautiful house in Italy with a studio in it. Had that all ready to go, and then lockdown happened. So I had to rethink everything. And it was then I started asking myself all these questions. You know, why am I doing this? What am I doing it for? And I realised that a lot of it, of what I do, is because it's who I am. I'm a single parent. I come from a single parent family, from a council estate. I'm mixed race. I'm Catholic. I'm gay. I was going through my menopause. I've had a hysterectomy. I've had a bowel surgery, so I've had a bag. A lot of people don't talk about that. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm doing all of these things because it's who I am. And all of the people that I've wanted to help my whole life, disadvantaged kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, the LGBTQA plus community, people of colour, women, it's me. And so I started honing everything around that. And then with my podcast, I again was like, there's going to be so many people who've gone through this. I remember being in a ward with, when I had my bag full of 90 odd plus year old patients, because they were all cancer patients that had stomas. And I was in my 30s, early 30s. And the woman opposite me died, and they brought her back to life in front of me. And the sun was shining outside the hospital window. And, you know, nighttime, you had people cry. So I was like trying to get all the old ladies day by day. I was like, come on, you can do it. And I was like, just really trying to. But I was turning my hospital gloves. Like, I had a way to, because I was in a lot of pain. But I'd fill up my hospital gloves with the tea tray water because it wasn't too hot. And a hot water bottle was too much pain to put on. So I figured a way to get like glove hot water bottles. So I just placed them where the pain was, and you know, you could get through the night and sleep. Honestly, it's an amazing trick. I say it to everyone now. I'm like, fill the hospital gloves up with the tea water. It's amazing. You know, so it's, I'm like, yeah. And there's people, you know, with all sorts that are going through stuff, young and old, and it's important to stop our daily life and remember and be there for people. And that's why I wanted to start the podcast as well, because people can listen without judgment. They don't need to see anyone. They can have the time to hear. Hearing without seeing is so important. So the power of audio is amazing, because it gives you a completely different perspective, and you can be immersed in that story. And it gives you a different feeling, and then you take the information in a different way, and it helps you make better decisions. I don't know. That's how I feel anyway. So yeah, and then we're here, like, and then I just was like, I have to make change. I have to. So I was like, you know, when I went to uni, I was the first person of color, not the first person of color, the only woman in my year of color. There were 6 women in the whole year. I was the only one of color in the year. And that was 23 years ago. And I did my dissertation on the lack of female sound engineers 23 years ago. And then when I started my company, the percentage of female producers was 2%. That's probably, it fluctuates now between 3 and 5, I think. And so look in that 23 years. So I was like, I'm going to open an academy and teach them myself. I'm going to physically change the statistics myself. I can do this. I know, you know, I've got enough experience. I know Logic. I know Ableton. You know, I learned on Pro Tools, even though I don't use it anymore. But, you know, I've got enough experience to be able to teach people how to use a DAW. And so I've started doing it. And the first cohort was phenomenal. It was more than I could have hoped for. And they're all staying on for the second cohort. One of my students from that has gone on to sign up to do a master's in music because she's confident now. One of the main things that came out of that was the fact that they were all so happy they could ask questions. And this is a problem we see consistently.
Yeah, because
in
you create
industry.
Like a safe space.
And that one thing is what will allow people to grow. And I'm the time like, you know what, if you still don't know what MIDI is in week 8, we'll add another week on. You know, that's how I am.
I love the mentality. It's so good. I think that what you're doing is amazing, and I love that your approach of just like problem solving. And do you know what? I also grew up in a council estate and I also have that mindset. So I think there's something in that, you know, because I said this before on actually a different podcast I did with my friend Chess called The Big Badge Energy. And I was saying that, like, what you said, which is we had no money. So if something broke, you have to fix it. You can't go get a new one.
No.
And we had to like learn to survive. And in a way that's taught me this, like, everything can be fixed, everything can be solved. I don't care what the problem is, whether it's like patriarchy or a broken like light switch.
Yeah.
We'll figure out a way to fix it.
Exactly. And it's just like, you can't stop. Like, it's who I am. And I realise that for me, it's my purpose. I've got this energy and drive behind it. And I won't stop, especially as well, because I have a 4-year-old daughter that I have to show up for. I have to be a role model for. There are so many of us that would have grown up not having the role models that we hoped to have, showing us the way, showing us that we can be anything that we want. We don't have to fit into a mold. We can choose to be absolutely anything. There is no restriction. And that is kind of like what I want to show people. You can be anything. And luckily, my ADHD helps me do that.
I love it. Actually, do you know what? I was just about to ask you if, reflecting on your whole journey, if you had some advice, but I think you've just said it, that like maybe you've got more tips, more things, but that's such a good one of like leaning into who you are and the differences about each other and the kind of quirks can be your superpowers and your kind of actually... really, when you lean into those things, those are the things that make you incredible and achieve so many different things. And there's a whole journey that we've talked about that you obviously had to go through to get to this point. But at the other side of it, like, you come out happier and feeling a sense of purpose and then actually able to fulfill that purpose because you're out there, you're actually doing these things. And I think that's honestly so inspirational just listening to your whole story. And I'm not
thank you
just saying that, like, I genuinely feel it.
Thank you.
So lovely. So yeah, that was my question. If you wanted to add anything else, like, so reflecting on the journey, like, you know, if someone's listening to this and they're also struggling and thinking, you know, maybe they've got their own personal struggles, but also the general kind of state of the music industry being what it is.
Yeah.
Like, what lessons could they take from you, do you think?
So I would say one of the things that helps me when I start getting the doubt starts creeping in and things like that, I say out loud, Eve, are you doing the best you can? And the answer is always yes, because I know that I try every single day. I wake up every day trying my best. So that's one thing. Are you being the best that you can? You know, the other thing is, are you moving forward? Now, that could be sending an email today. It could be getting dressed. It could be, there's different ways of moving forward for people depending on where they're at. It could be getting out of bed, you know, and if you are, then amazing. You know, the other thing, don't compare yourself to other people. You are not them. They are not you. They can never be you. You have your own fingerprint for a reason. You know, you survived 44.1 trillion odds of being born for a reason. Remember that. And comparison is the biggest killer of the soul. So look at yourself, know you're being the best that you can. Don't compare yourself, know that you are amazing in your own right because you're supposed to be here for whatever reason that might be. And also, start a good thing jar. I've got a good thing jar and this podcast is going in there. I put anything, any good thing that happens, I put it in and I date it and it goes in the good thing jar for me to read on New Year. And it's like we forget our daily things that we go through. Like, someone smiled at me on a platform the other day, that went in there. You know, it can be anything that makes you feel good, you know, just to remember good things do happen.
I love it. Those are great tips. And I'm also going to start a good thing jar. And I'm going to call it Eve's Good Thing Jar. I love it.
Do you know what?
That's happening.
Honestly, last year, everyone was putting their good thing jars up and I hashtagged it. And a friend of mine from primary school actually bought his family. He went out and got jars for his family for Christmas presents to give them. And I'm just like,
That's such a good gift.
I know. And yeah, it's amazing. It's just a great way to remember.
I love it. So before I ask you the last question that I've asked everybody, is there anything you want to plug or tell people that you're working on? Yes, go. Tell us everything.
I'm literally like, it's just constant. I'm hoping to get funding for my new cohort of the Academy coming up. I've also just got a small pot of funding to give 10 one-hour workshops, production workshops for the Academy. So I'll be getting on that soon as well, when I have some time. yes, there's something special coming up towards the end of the year for mothers that write. So that's keep an eye out for that. I don't want to say too much, but it's ongoing. It's ongoing. I'm sure you'll see me pop up somewhere, but there's a lot that's happening. But yeah, my main focus for me is getting the academy up and running again.
Great. Okay, so I'll put links to anything so people can find you on social media and follow you and keep up with what you're doing. So my last question that I asked everybody on this season is, can you tell us your favourite music maker who identifies as female or as a woman, and ideally two. So one who you would consider someone as like an all-time favourite and one as like a more recent somebody that you're loving or enjoying. I know, tough question. You could actually have as many as you want because obviously there are no rules here, but
there's so many. Missy Elliott, straight away, she's just everything. God, there's so many. Like before that, even all of the greats that you can't even go into, people like Tina Turner, and for their strength, that every single person has a reason for it. Not only are they phenomenal artists, but humans as well, and you look up to them for different ways. But Missy being like one of the first female producers that came through, like Linda Perry was there, but she wasn't as at the front as Missy. And she's just a genius, I think, Missy Elliott. God, there's so many. This is really hard. It's not fair. And, ask someone like me. Can't ask someone. Yeah. There's too much. Too many. I can't answer it.
Too many. That's fine. I also freak out when people ask me this question because I'm like, brain overload.
Yeah.
I'm just like loads of different answers and I'm like, I don't know if that's an appropriate answer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Missy Elliott and Tina Turner, I mean, these are incredibly strong answers. And I'm the same. I made a playlist of all the people's answers. So if there's a particular song you want me to put on the playlist, that will be from you.
Okay. Deal. What, my own song or Missy Elliott or...
Well, I'll put a song from you. Tell me a song.
No.
To put on. I did do that to some of the other guests. I put Michelle Escoffrey was on
her tune. Episodes,
so I put her Liberty X song.
Yeah. Do you know, I remember playing, so we were in girl groups at the same time, myself and Michelle. We performed a few clubs together back in the day, a few shows. I don't know if we did the Radio 1 Mode show together, but anyway... I remember doing some radio because I did a bit of radio as well. I love radio. And I remember when Liberty X lost to whoever else won it. I can't remember who won Pop Idol. But I was like, Liberty X are amazing. I love them. And that tune was everything. And so I used to play it constantly on radio when I did. Yeah, it was only a community radio, but it was great.
I know, I loved it. As soon as she started talking about it, it was like in my head immediately because it's such a catchy song.
But then she had her own tune as well. Do you ever think about Miller? That is another wicked garage tune.
Oh yeah, she's done plenty. So yeah, I've snuck a few on there that's by the guests, and then ones that the guests have said are their favourite kind of artist. And actually, it's a banging playlist, so everyone should listen just for a good time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Eve. It's honestly been so lovely talking to you, and I really genuinely appreciate you being so open and sharing your story with us. I'm sure people listening will also feel what I feel, which is just that you're an amazing, incredible person, and I feel so inspired and so grateful that you've shared with us today.
Thank you so much. Honestly, it's an honour. It just is. And thank you for the space, and thank you. I'm grateful for the time that you've given me. Honestly, it's hard telling your story and putting it out there, but it's not something that you... I just open my mouth and stuff comes out. Like, it's not planned at all. And that's the worrying thing, because I never know what's going to come out of my mouth. And then it's too late. So I just have to deal with it. I have to be like, oh, well, that's what happened.
Oh, that's hilarious. It's like, surprise, what's coming next? Who knows?
Oh, God. But no, it's been brilliant. And it's really refreshing to be able to talk about my recent diagnosis. It's very new, and it's so lovely to meet someone who can understand, you know, a lot of what I'm talking about. Really refreshing, so thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.